Chapter 20, Lanai, May 1872. Thomas had never worked harder in his life. In the 4 weeks since his return from Honolulu, he and Kukane mapped out plots for new plantings and supervised the first and second gang workers who laid in the new cane. They built irrigation flumes and cane wagons, cleared 50 acres of brush and trees, constructed more housing for the workers, and widened the road to the loading docks on the coast. They also imported new varieties of sugarcane to plant in test plots. Since it took 2 years for the cane to reach harvestable size, their experiment might not pay off for several years, if ever. But if they were able to identify higher yield varieties with shorter growing times, it could transform their business and allow for the production of one more crop per year. Kukane joined Thomas every evening for dinner, and the men talked long into the night about Hawaiian history and culture. The field supervisor's knowledge of Polynesian geography and natural history inspired Thomas to convert the field shack his partner had used as an illicit love nest into a one-room schoolhouse. They placed an advertisement for a teacher in the Honolulu newspaper and hired the first and only applicant for the job, a young woman who had been teaching at a mission school on Oahu, but who desired to work in a more pastoral setting. Thomas saw that she had supplies and books, and they built 2 new rooms in the cabin for her living quarters. They also purchased a 1-year pass on the coaster so that she could take the afternoon packet home on Friday afternoons and return on Sundays. A Catholic priest visited on the first day of class to bless the venture, which he did to the thunderous applause of parents from 4 different countries. Absent from the celebration was Thomas's partner, William Fortnight. The 2 men had entered an uneasy truce upon Thomas's return from Honolulu, and now Fortnight focused on managing the accounts and left the day-to-day plantation operations to Thomas. At Thomas's insistence, they signed an agreement specifying that the $50,000 line of credit from the bank would be accessed and used only for the purchase of land, new cane plants, equipment, and labor. At midday on the 20th, Thomas was supervising a third gang team as they burned an acre of slash to prepare it for planting. He heard shouts and turned to see a horse and rider bolt out of a stand of trees to the west. The horse was heavily lathered, not a surprise, Thomas thought, given the size of the rider. A minute later, he realized that it was a coney in the saddle. The king's nephew flew up to the top of the low hill. He was breathing almost as hard as his horse. "Akoni, what?" Thomas began.
"You must leave here now, Thomas," said Akoni as he swung down off the horse. "There is no time. I have a skiff at the landing."
Kukane handed the huge man a canteen of cool water, and when he had his fill, Thomas asked, "Leave? Why? And where did you come from?"
"I arrived an hour ago from Honolulu and paid the owner of the general merchandise store a few dollars to borrow his horse. We don't have much time, maybe an hour."
"To do what?" Thomas asked.
"To save your life," Akoni answered.
Kukane tapped his pipe on the bottom of his boot. "Perhaps you would like to explain the situation."
"I'm sorry," Akoni answered. He gathered his breath and continued, "Thomas, 4 men will be arriving on the packet in about an hour. One is named Donegan. Does that name mean anything to you?"
Thomas shook his head.
"He is an assassin employed by a man named Stafford in San Francisco. He arrived in Honolulu 3 days ago and hired 3 layabouts to come here with him and kill you."
"That name I know," Thomas replied. "The one you told me about?" asked Kukane. "The one you wrote about in your article?" Thomas nodded and then shook his head.
"How the hell did he track me here?" he said in a low voice. "I have some idea," answered Akoni, "and I will tell you when we leave the island."
"To go where?" asked Thomas.
Akoni shook his head. "That I do not know. When we get the sail up, we can decide. Right now, we need to leave.
1 hour, you said?
Maybe less. 1 hour to get to the harbor. 1 hour to get here.
Thomas briefly considered making a stand against the men. With Akoni and Kukane beside him, the odds would be about even. Then he looked out across the field and saw dozens of workers and children scattered around the cane plots. When the bullets started flying, they would all become targets.
My cabin is over there, he said, pointing to a small structure at the edge of the field 300 yards down the valley. Let me take your horse so I can go and pack, and you two get over there as quickly as you can.
Without waiting for a response, Thomas stepped up into the saddle and put his heels to the horse's flanks. It felt good to ride, even under these circumstances. He galloped at full speed to his cabin and tethered the horse to a post. Then he went inside and began throwing clothes into his satchel. He was slipping his Colt revolver into his belt when Kukane and Akoni stepped through the door.
I sent a boy to the main house to saddle a horse for you, Thomas, said Kukane. I will gather it up at the landing later.
Thomas opened a desk drawer and took out an envelope. This is for you, my friend, he told Kukane. If anything happens to me, my 50% ownership of the plantation belongs to you. That includes the right to make draws against the credit line.
Kukane took the envelope and slipped it into his shirt pocket.
Let us hope it does not come to that.
Then Thomas walked to the corner of the room, pried up a floorboard, and lifted out a small metal box. He took out a stack of paper money tied with a string before handing the box to Kukane.
Here is $2,000. See to it that the school teacher is paid, and use the rest as you see fit.
Kukane's eyes were misting as he took the box.
You will be back tomorrow, Thomas. I know you will.
Thomas laid his hand on Kukane's shoulder.
I guess we both know that won't be happening, he replied.
They heard the sound of a horse approaching and went out under a warm, cloudless sky. Thomas breathed in the scent of burning cane and felt a soft breeze spill through the tree line. He could see planting crews in the distance, and when he strained his ears, he could just make out the song they were singing. He turned to Kukane and embraced him. Then he mounted his horse, gripped his satchel with one hand, and galloped off towards the coast behind Akoni. The tiller pulled gently in Akoni's experienced hands, and when he released it, the 17-foot single-sail skiff rounded up easily into the eye of the wind and accelerated briskly away from the landing. Thomas had sailed enough to know that the press of a breeze would tend to twist the sail and lift the after end of the boom, which was something experienced sailors worked to avoid. The triangle formed by the spirit boom, the sail's foot, and the mast took care of that problem, Akoni had explained when he set the mast and sail after their gallop from the plantation. There was still, however, the question of where they were going.
Molokai? Said Thomas.
Northeast, into the Kalohi Channel, then hug the coast and make for Halawa Bay. We'll anchor there and figure out our next move.
Akoni nodded and concentrated on navigating the craft across the choppy waters of the channel. The southern coast of Molokai was 15 nautical miles from the wooden pier of Lanai, and Thomas estimated they would arrive in under 2 hours. With fair winds and a following sea, they could take shelter on Molokai's northeast coast before sunset. He was learning that Akoni was not a particularly conversational man, and so he sat quietly in the bilge and tried to enjoy the journey. The Hawaiian handled the little boat skillfully, snugging up on the halyard and snouter to give more fullness to the sail when the wind was brisk, and slacking off on them when the wind eased up. Thomas wanted to ask if Noelani had been sailing the islands since childhood like her brother, but he decided not to poke that bear quite yet. The more immediate issue was what to do about Stafford's assassin. Donegan had steamed 3,000 miles to do his master's bidding, which meant that Stafford would not relent until the job was done, no matter
what it cost or how long it took, and if Donegan was worthy of his pay, he would leave no stone unturned to track Scoundrel down and kill him. Except for one, Thomas thought. He looked back at Akoni and wondered what he was going to think of the idea that was beginning to form in his mind. The southern coast of Molokai had been visible since they departed Lanai, and 90 minutes later they could make out the entry to Kalaeloa Harbor. Rugged green shrouded mountains swept up from behind the little harbor, where Thomas counted 3 small boats at anchor.
From here until we get to the northeastern peninsula, it's fish ponds and reef all the way, said Akoni. We'll stay well clear of the reefs until we get to Kapu'upoi, which is the easternmost promontory on the island. From there, it's just a few miles to the west along the shore to a small landing at Kapaliloa. I overnighted in a deserted fisherman's shack during a storm last year. We'll make for there.
You sail the islands a lot, said Thomas. Akoni pushed his hair back off his forehead and drank from the crockery jug he had packed.
Since I was a child, he replied. A few years ago, I began mapping some of the reefs and shoals that were overlooked by Captain Cook in 1784 and by the missionaries in the 1840s. Even your American Navy chose not to survey them in detail during the big topographical expedition after the Civil War. I also collect specimens from tide pools that are preserved and shipped to the British Museum of Natural History.
So that is how the nephew of a king spends his time, thought Thomas. I am impressed, he said as Akoni adjusted the sail to accommodate a shift in the wind's direction. Will you write a book? Akoni simply grinned in reply and pointed to the northeast.
This is as close as we will come to the shoreline until we round Kapu'upoi Head. We have been protected from the winds and waves of the open sea by both Maui and Lanai Islands, but that will change when we reach the north coast.
When they rounded the island's northeast head in the late afternoon and slipped close to the shore, the temperature dropped by 10 degrees and the surface chop picked up. They swung away from a huge rock at Kapaliloa, where it looked as if a giant shark had taken a bite out of the island, and Akoni began to ease the skiff towards a small, cliff-walled inlet. As they came close in, he spilled the wind from the skiff's sail and eased the shallow draft boat right up to the sand beach. Thomas shook his head and smiled as he stepped out of the skiff onto dry land, without getting his boots wet. An hour later, the two men were sitting beside a crackling fire as the sun dropped behind the fisherman's hut. The night was mild, and a blanket of stars spanned the sky across the horizon under a 3/4 moon. The skiff sat on a beach 50 yards away, protected from the tide and winds by thick brush and a line of stubby trees. They dined on the dried pork, biscuits, and fruit Akoni brought, along with a bottle of rum made from island molasses. When the king's nephew lit a pipe and settled back against a pile of smooth rocks, Thomas decided it was time to talk. If you are a man who keeps score, Akoni, your rescue today makes us even. My life for yours.
Yes, I suppose you're right. Of course, this rescue, as you call it, is not quite complete.
He paused for a moment to relight his pipe and then said,
I told you I would take you wherever you believed you would be safe, unless you plan to stay on this little beach. We haven't reached that place.
This was the opening Thomas had been waiting for. He looked up into the sky and felt as if an icy wind had gusted off the water. I know where I need to go, he said in a soft voice. It's the only place they won't search.
Akoni looked across at him through the flames. And where might that be, Thomas?
Kalavau. The giant Hawaiian set down his pipe and placed his hands on his knees. Then, in a voice drained of emotion, he said,
"You mean the leper colony?"
Thomas nodded and stared into the fire.